You're the big, big boss. You tell me what to do, and I gladly do my job. But I don't like your attitude.
Welcome to the Leadership in Tech podcast series. This is Paul Maslany again, bringing you our 15th episode. This week, Errol and Zach interview our very first guests, both employees from a company called CA Technology. Their names are Pete Welling and Brad Kramer. Sit back and enjoy the 15th installment in our Leadership in Tech podcast series called Culture, a Success Story. Before we get started, I would like to remind our listeners that Leadership in Tech releases a new episode weekly on Tuesdays. You can find our show notes, our past episodes, our blog, and more online at www.techonramp.com. If you'd like to reach out to us, you can do it on our website as well as on Facebook and on Twitter. Both are at Tech On Ramp. Thank you and enjoy the show.
Now tell me, who do you think you are? Besides the person who happens to be in charge.
See, Brad, what's your last name?
Kramer. Boom, we're live. And then just try to speak like a couple inches away from the mic. Do you want to set it up?
Yeah, here we are. So we're with Brad Kramer and Pete Welling, AC Technologies. This is our first go at basically bringing a success story in a company like CA Technologies from the business side, Pete Welling, and from the tech side, Brad Kramer. And we're going to kind of talk about a lot of the concepts that we've talked about in the first 11 episodes, and these guys are going to talk about how it works at CA, because they're a success story. Because initially,
for the record, I asked you to bring in a failure story.
Right. We were
and you went and had a success story.
Pete, for the record, is an old friend of mine, and I called him and asked him if we could do this, and he's running through like a perfect scenario, and he says to me, "Well, Errol, I'm just not sure I'm going to be able to give you the drama you're looking for."
I was looking for a disaster.
So, you thought I was looking for a disaster, right?
I was looking for a disaster.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Oh,
it's nice to see you.
Yeah, it's great to see you, Pete. You guys are also an anomaly in that you've both been at AC Technologies for almost 20 years. CA Technologies. You guys have been at CA Technologies for almost 20 years apiece. That you don't see that too often.
Yeah, not by design, but you look back, it just happened.
So set up. So what's your guys' relationship at CA Technologies? Sort of give a little background.
Sure. Well, you know, again, I'm Peter Welling. I'm an account director at CA since 1995 with large-scale customers, you know, ranging from global systems outsourcers to, you know, healthcare providers and the last decade or so with government here in New York and New York State. So I'm an overall account manager, sort of like the coach of the game plan of how we engage with our customers. And then I work closely with folks like my colleague Brad Kramer, who's on the solution architecture side, and hello, Brad.
Hey. So I'm a senior business technology architect, and I've been working with Peter for the last almost 8 years. In this role, I've had a number of different roles at CA. I've been in services. I've managed teams in the pre-sales area. I've been a pre-sales consultant myself, and my job is really twofold. It's to support Peter in making sure that the technology solutions that we're proposing to our customers are actually going to meet their needs, and it's also to be a bit of a traffic cop. So we have a number of supporting teams that we work with that are specialized in one of our four business units. And it's my job to make sure that they're not stepping on each other and the customer is not getting mixed messages based on what it is that they're trying to achieve. So it's my job to keep the technology on track and make sure that whoever we're bringing in to a particular sales opportunity understands where we're headed and what piece they are going to fit in to make it work for the customer.
So one of the things that we started, Brad, as we were just chatting, I said, you know, me and Zach, under the umbrella of Tech On Ramp, are just kind of promoting that every company is a tech company. And you had brought that to light with your previous work experience Tell us a little bit about that and how that's just, that's a fact, even as it goes back to, as you would say, pre-World Wide Web, when you worked in retail and things like that.
Yeah, so as my career has changed over the years, starting in financial services and then moving on to a number of different industries, as I've watched the way in which technology is applied to solve business problems or the way it's applied in order to make companies more competitive in the marketplace has changed dramatically. And just before we started, I was talking about going into a Tesla showroom and sitting in a Tesla and recognizing that not only was this a plug-in hybrid electric car, but that basically it was a computer on wheels, right? That they had designed software and technology in order to make this four-wheeled thing go from here to there. And it's a good example of how it's very difficult now to separate some industries from the technology that they use to actually support the development, production, and sale of their product. Cars are an excellent example, but if you look like the in general at retail, the shift from brick and mortar stores where I was working when I was in retail, where it was all about point of sale systems, that was really the only way technology was supporting retail at the time, aside from the back office human resources side. But you know, working with the customer was all about point of sale. Now it's about, yes, there's a point of sale in a brick and mortar store, but more than likely a significant portion of their revenue is coming from internet sales, is coming from online sales.
And they're trying to monetize their data and do all kinds of crazy things.
That's right. Take advantage of not only the what they know about their customer, but how they can predict what their customer might want or how they that customer's tastes might be changing. And so when we talk at CA about the application economy, it's just that every company now is in the software business.
All right. And so Pete, from the sales perspective, that's had to change for you a lot since you first got into sales to now, right?
Even before CA, I started back National Westminster Bank in their U.S. operations, and I was in systems development and, so kind of anchored in IT. The closest we got to the business side was, a marketing unit, that talked about what products and services they're bringing to the branch.
Right.
Today, it's completely different. IT and the business now rolls up to the boardroom.
Right.
And, it's very symbiotic. And if you're not addressing the business outcomes that a customer is looking for, you're going to miss the mark with your IT colleagues and from the customer side. And they're of course, when we're working with our customers now, it's just so common that the conversation is about what business outcomes they're looking to meet for, in this case, government, whether it's an agency, a social services program that is mandated by some sort of federal law, perhaps, to deliver some sort of an outcome to citizen services. Well, how does that roll all the way down to an IT enablement thing? Because right now, it's no longer about online, waiting online at an agency's front doors to open. It's all about online. How is all of those services now coming online? And that just has such implications to how teams are formed, mm-hmm. in terms of how the organization is going to go drive towards some end result. And when they're engaging with the vendor community, how the vendor community is now forming its teams, from CA, it's highly matrix, right? Because, I'm leading an effort to go achieve a certain outcome with the customer, but the folks that I'm leading don't report to me.
Right.
So I've got to kind of bring them along and show them that there's a path to success and have to earn their trust and confidence. And I have to, bring together the right approach for that customer that would range from not only my colleagues on the sales side, whether that's management, who is perhaps expert in a certain discipline, but also the IT side or the product side, and bringing case studies together and bringing our past qualifications together and how we've achieved certain outcomes for another customer, and how to draw those similarities down to the customer that we're working with at this point in time, for that new business initiative. So, and it's not even just within CA, because, right now it's, you can't do it alone. It's all about partnering as well.
Right.
So there's different niche technology partners that may do certain things. There's certainly the large systems integrator community, and we all have to come together and figure it out. You know, we're not only selling to ourselves the wire reach relevant, but we're also kind of putting our own teams together to go and work with the customer. And the customer might be fostering that themselves, right? They may have formality going, you know, I'm going to work with systems integrator one and tech company A and perhaps CA, and they bring us together, or it's the other way around, right? So our matrix teams are no longer internal within our own organization, but the matrix teams now are with our partner community.
Right.
Yeah, these projects are so complex, right? There's so many moving parts that it's almost like a little company just for that one project because there's so many people involved.
Yeah, I mean, products may not, the complexity may not necessarily sit with the product, but the complexity can certainly sit with the business outcome. Because the business outcome may not be, you know, it may not be hinging on one product. It could be a whole suite of processes. It could be, you know, ERP systems, and it could be, you know, a security authentication layer. It could be a new web portal that's designed, and it's, you know, it could be highly complex.
And so then, like, the communication between all the parties involved and sort of the selling to yourself and keeping everyone marching in the right direction, there has to be a big leadership tie there because you're basically leading many teams.
And you were saying it hasn't, like, you know, just to take a step back, we were joking earlier when I contacted Pete to do this, you know, we said, like, you know, here's what Tech OnRamp is, here's what we're doing. And I said, just, you know, Pete, walk me through your process and the integration, and he's just ripping through it. And I'm like, well, that sounds pretty good. I said, it was my understanding that this was a struggle. So, but then Pete, you had said, you know, it hasn't always been like this, and the convergence between IT and business is evolving, but CA Technologies really seems to kind
of
have
it down. There's a lot of things that support that, right? It's not just a go-to-market plan with the customer. It's actually layers deeper, you know, culturally within the organization. So how organizations go through culture change to make themselves, you know, more agile from a business operations perspective and more team oriented, and, you know, how you foster this concept of leadership at all levels, right? It's no longer about, you know, there's a CEO and everyone's just sort of, you know, gazing up onto the, you know, onto the stage, you know, what is he going to tell us all to do today? Let's go do it.
Right.
Everyone's empowered to go
right.
get it done. Right, and you have to take risk, and you have to have the skills to take that risk in a measured way, mm-hmm. knowing that, you know, we're meeting corporate goals and customer goals and team goals.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what companies like CA are fostering.
Right,
and you know it's interesting. It's been underway for many, many years, and it's kind of nice to see the maturity of that.
Yeah,
and as that matures, the impact it has with our customers. Like, we do something called Net Promoter Surveys, where we survey our customers in terms of how they interact with CA, what's their impressions of us. Not only our tools, but, you know, the account team or our service delivery teams and, you know, broader industry interactions they may have with us through partners,
mm-hmm.
through conferences, and all that stuff gives you very interesting insight.
Right.
And so, you know, and then what do you do with that data, right?
Right.
You know, how are we going to make course corrections to look at what our customers are telling us, you know, where are we doing well, right? And how do we capitalize on that? And where we're falling short, what do we do to change that?
Right.
And how do we go about it? And it's a very iterative, constant set of reviews that we do on a quarterly basis. And
right.
All that stuff really just creates a better customer experience.
Right. And I would say from a corporate perspective at CA, when we talk about things like Net Promoter Scores, In this is my CA is the first job I ever had where I was actually selling something. I was typically over on the other side of the table, corporate IT, and someone was selling me. But the difference that the CA executive management has is it's not just about selling to the customer, right? One of the goals that we have that's preached to us over and over is it's our job to delight our customer. And I hear that in other companies as well. And that's a completely different feeling when I go and talk to my customer, that idea that I'm not selling to my customer, that I'm talking to my customer, and I want that customer to be wowed by what I am telling them, what I'm showing them, what I'm demonstrating for them, what we ultimately achieve together as a team.
Right.
And so that leadership goal of delighting the customer pervades the organization. And when we talk to our developers internally, so the people who are developing our software. So in effect, we're kind of their customer. You get that same feeling when you're talking to them. It's not about we want to do this because we think it's right. It's no, we're doing it this way because that's what we're hearing from our customers, right? We're listening to the customer, and that form of communication is it changes the conversation that we have ultimately with our customers who we're trying to sell those products.
So I mean, what I'm hearing is you guys are putting a culture in place, and to a degree, a leadership culture that drives all aspects of it. There's a great leadership company out there, Leader 193, whose mantra is, without a leadership culture, you will become stagnant or irrelevant.
They pop up on my LinkedIn all the time.
They're amazing. But so how has it changed over the years then, you know, the collaboration, you know, 20 years ago, what's the collaboration between Brad on the IT side and Pete on the business side look like? And then how has it changed, you know, to today? How has that changed over the years in your perspective?
The biggest change really has to do with how, at what point in the process of trying to make an idea into reality, at what point in the process does business and technology actually get engaged, right? So that's the first thing. So today, more than likely, if I'm a business owner, if I'm a business executive and I have an idea, right, the first thing I might do is I might vet that idea with my peers, right? Is this something that the company is, it's going to help the company? In fact, they're going to make the company more money. It's going to make us more market share, whatever those things are, those business drivers. The next conversation they're probably going to have is they're going to look across the table to somebody in IT and say, how can IT help us achieve this?
How much is it going to cost to build it?
How much is it going to cost? And can you deliver it by X date, right? Because that's when we think that the market is going to be primed and we want to be in it before somebody else. So getting engaged with IT used to be that those conversations, as Peter said earlier, didn't happen in the boardroom.
Right.
Now more than likely they're happening in the boardroom because everyone recognizes that it's technology. More than likely it's going to have a big hand in making that idea into a reality. But the next step is how often the business engages with IT during the process of, let's say, building a new application or delivering a new service. In the past, if you go back, even maybe as much as 5 years ago, it would be, I'm the business, I tell IT what I want,
yes.
IT goes away for a year.
Right.
And they come back and they say, is this what you asked for? We think we got it.
No,
the business would either say yes or no. Right? In which case, the company's either put a whole bunch of money into something that's useless, or they've missed the market opportunity, or you know what, it's close, but it's not right, and then IT has to go off and do it again.
Another year
maybe. Now, given the pace of change that happens in the marketplace and the need that, the demand that consumers have to have things happen very quickly, the business has to sit down with IT almost on a daily basis and continually touch base and continually reaffirm and reestablish what it is that's trying to be accomplished. And so what IT is doing now is they're working faster to try and provide an understanding of what this final product might look like. It might not be complete. In Scale Agile, we call it a most viable product. What can we show the business quickly that's going to have them say, you know what, I know I asked for blue, but I really meant red.
Right.
And so you haven't plowed a lot of money and time and effort into it, but you're still moving the project forward. And so
fail early.
Fail early, fail fast.
That's our next episode, actually.
Exactly. Okay. And in that way, you're either getting something moving very quickly or you're saying, guess what, this isn't going to happen. It's not going to work. Let's move on to another idea.
You know,
I think that's the biggest
change. I'm listening to this, Brad, you know, I'm thinking back to you would throw a product out there, right? And how did they go about it, right? They had some, they were in tune with what they believed to be their customers in some way, shape, or form. They did those things where they had focus groups, or you call somebody into a conference room and you present and see what their reaction is, right? But now it's all about crowdsourcing, it's about communities, and it's all online, real time. And it's that whole transformation, right? From long duration, waterfall outcomes to daily, iterative, agile. But there's so many elements to, like, what are the inputs to that, right? And so I think one of the big inputs now is this constant feedback loop from your potential customer, right? Because we're putting things out there in these communities where we're forcing our customers to make commentary and to have a seat at the table, like a virtual seat at the table.
Yep.
Here's what I want. You know, the community now is no longer the company. We know best what our customers want. No, the community is it's actually the customers.
Well, let me.
Is everyone kind of voting on this is what we want, right? And you're raising your virtual hand. Yeah, that's it.
Right.
Every day, and it changes from day to day and week to week.
Well, this is something that, so this is a great lead into, because we have, you know, again, Zach and I are on not opposite sides of the spectrum.
Oh, it's opposite.
Well, it is opposite, actually. And I come from the correct side of the spectrum, typically, and he comes from the incorrect side. No, I'm just kidding. But one of the things that we talk about is ideas, right? Throwing stuff up against the wall, see what sticks, okay? And, I have a military background. I was with the FBI, so we have a case, we have an operation, and we can be free thinking in how we want to attack it. But once we have that goal, then there's a planning process.
Sure.
Right? Okay, now get into the planning process. What's our situation? What's our mission? What are our actions? What are our contingencies to those actions? What's the command and control? Now, I've been doing that my entire adult life. I can just do it in a second in my head. Zach makes the joke that plans are for people who plan to fail. So my question to you guys, as you said this is, that's a lot. Daily communication with the customer, with each other. Walk me through, do you have a planning process that can be changed from moment to moment? Okay, new process. We're throwing stuff against the wall, but we still have to have a process.
I
make
like
sure we're throwing
do,
the best thing against
I feel like
the
you
wall.
Didn't do my side credit, first of all. Just let me say.
Okay.
In the old waterfall sense, there was a project plan, and there might be 40 pages, and everyone signed off on it, and then by day two, the plan was off the rails, right? The fact that we all signed off on the plan, we were basically signing our names to, this is going to fail, right? Today, there's no 40-page document. There might not even be a business plan. There might be nothing, except we know we're going to sit with the community tomorrow and talk again. And so, in my mind, I haven't been trained for 40 years to do the contingency thing in my mind and then working on it because I think that is a good idea, but none of that happened. It's like a blank space up there, but I know I'm going to sit with the community tomorrow, so whatever I do, it could be the worst or it could be the best, we'll course correct tomorrow. So in that sense, there's no plan. So it might be a bit extreme.
So what do you guys, do you see where we're going with that?
Yeah, when you said left and right, it's also, West Coast California versus East Coast mentality, right?
Yes. I was going to say I'm usually right and he's usually left, but then, God, in our political culture today, if somebody would be turning this off, so I'd say correct and incorrect.
So. Well, it was interesting because that's part of that whole convergence of how you work towards a deliverable. You need to have some sort of outcome on the horizon you're working towards. Question is, how do you get from A to Z? It used to be that structured waterfall, very linear, we've already preconceived what our outcome is going to be, now we're going to build it. And, that's not really, in many cases, viable today. I'm kind of laughing at myself a little bit because there's also a difference between, the organization. Commercial, whether you're a private company or if you're a public company, versus government, right? Commercial organizations and private organizations can be more nimble, can be more, they can manage risk in a different way. What we see with government is they're striving to do that. They would love to do that, but because of the realities of how government has to handle things like public money, right? You can't just say, we're gonna do this project and we're gonna throw potentially multi-millions of dollars at it and we hope to achieve this kind of outcome. They haven't gotten
there.
There's
rules. Yeah.
It's exciting. Everyone aspires to it because it's very motivating and it's kind of where the future is. But they get hung up on things like procurement process and capital versus expense and you have to be accountable for certain milestones. So there's a dichotomy of forces here that are opposing each other. And I think eventually it's going to win out towards the nimble, agile side, but they got to figure it out.
Right.
And it's just interesting to see that play out,
Which of course, flies in the face of, being cognizant of using public funds, and that the statistics over the years have shown that, something like less than 30% of all government projects are actually considered a success.
That's not just government though.
No, it's not. It's
even
not.
Even in the commercial space.
And that's, when we talk about failing fast, that government and certainly the private industry has recognized that there's value in making adjustments as you go along. So yes, when you say that you have a process and a plan for how to do things. I think those still exist. At CA, we have sales processes that we're supposed to follow.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just because we're supposed to do things in a certain way, but because as an organization, the higher-ups need to know what we're doing down at, boots on the street. And so there's certain things that we need to be able to provide in terms of information. So there are things that we need to provide as part of that process. And at the same time, there are things that have proven successful, that have been used in other by other salespeople, other parts of the organization, that it's certainly suggested that perhaps you might make use of some of those things as it relates to the overall process. So there are documents that we produce, there are presentations that we do, there are demonstrations that we might do. A lot of those are things that have already been kind of worked out ahead of time. And we might actually be planning to move from one stage to the next. And yes, we have contingencies, but what if the customer changes their mind in the middle and decide they want to do something else? Yes, we have to be able to have a contingency plan for how to maintain contact with the customer and not have them simply walk away and go talk to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
When we look at the way our software is developed and in general how software is being developed today, if you look at, and I keep talking about Scale Agile because that's what I'm familiar with, there is a big process. There are places that you should be doing this at this point, you should be doing it at that point. Here are the people who should be involved when you talk about command and control.
Mm-hmm.
Here are the people who should be involved in, who should be signing off on certain things. But what that's designed to do is not simply make it a rigid process, but allow for creativity, as Peter said, and being able to say, I'm empowered to go ahead and make a decision with the understanding that there's this bigger process that I have to fit into as I'm moving along.
You can be creative within the guidelines that have been set forward. You have a goal, get to that goal, you know, and wide set of guidelines, narrow set of guidelines, but what you do in here, you know, and I'm making a movement with my hands in between the guidelines, is up to you, and that does leave a lot of creative latitude, I think. And you know, in my world, my former world, let's just use the example, right, where, you know, we're in war, and we're patrolling, and we're going to, the ultimate goal is to take down this compound and go capture the bad guy, right? So that's, we have our plan, we have the situation, the mission, and we go in, and all the doors are bolted shut that we didn't expect, and we also have two people who fell and broke their legs. But we have the same overall goal, but just like you said, with the customer, something changed. So I've got to go through a whole new, we have a whole new situation. The doors are not what they said they were, and we've got to deal with these two guys who are down. So the situation is we have to get these two guys down, we have to figure out what the what explosives we need, do we have those? And so the process goes like this. And that's kind of what I'm talking about as far as a plan and a process. It's not rigid, it is nimble, but if you have something that you can go to, you can make those changes quickly. I mean, is that, am I resonating
yeah.
a little bit?
Yeah, I don't know what you heard, but it sounded to me like they totally agreed with me.
But you know what?
In effect,
we're kind of agreeing with both of
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
One, we recognize that there's a business outcome. Somebody has a goal they want to achieve. Somebody wants to build something, sell something, buy something, create something, right? Ultimately, that's the goal, right, of the mission, of the project.
Right.
But at the same time, we're saying within the, as you said, Zach, within the confines of achieving that goal, there are a number of different ways that we can come at it.
Right.
And there are a number of different tools that we can apply, and there are a number of different methods that can be applied in order to achieve it. And ultimately, if you're the commander of the mission, you know, the outcome is what's important, right? If there are things that need to be figured out as the mission is unfolding or as the project is unfolding, if I'm the guy who has the goal that I want to achieve, do I really care how you got it?
Right.
No. Do I want you to break the law or do some other things that perhaps are against the corporate culture? No, I don't want you to do that. But at the same time, if you need to do something new or try something different, you know what? Go knock yourself out. All I want is that finished product at the end.
So tell me how you guys communicate to each other when that happens, right? You just fail fast, right? That's what Zach and I have talked about. And I think we can all agree that that's the way to go. If you're going to do something, find out soon. So you've got the customer.
But I'm painting, I'm painting this visual picture in my head, right? Errol, so I obviously served your country with dignity and as a U.S. Navy SEAL. And I'm just thinking, you know, when you go on your missions or your past tense, the more of your team we've been in those similar situations before with, the more fluid and dynamic, the more trusting everybody is, the more things happen intuitively, not because you're not expecting it, but because you know when this happens, that happens, and this person's going to do this and you do that. And, I mean, same parallels to business, obviously.
100%.
The more that I'm in certain situations with my colleagues on a repetitive basis, when we find ourselves in a similar situation, those things kind of just happen naturally.
Right.
Because we've been there before. I know that, you know, Brad's going to say this, and I'm going to say that, and we're going to go back to this customer example, and we've done it before.
Right.
So, yeah, I think there's, I think that's,
there's,
I think those things just happen naturally as you, as these teams mature together, right?
Now, and you're right. And, you know, it's funny you brought that up because one of the things that we kind of preach here is, you know, I bring my leadership experience to the table, right? And then we translate what does it mean to the IT world. And now, again, we're combining both with you guys. But the point is always the principles are the principles and they're applicable everywhere.
Sure.
What I'll tell my clients is, why does it need to be a life or death situation for you to apply the most basic leadership principles? And it resonates with people because sometimes they just don't. Well, why don't you do this? Well, I'm not sure. Well, we do this to make sure people's lives are saved. Just think how effective you'll be.
Right? Yeah, I mean, when we look at when we look at customer failures as it relates, let's say, to the implementation or use of some of our software, many of the failures occur because of a lack of leadership, right? So somebody had a good idea, right? And they're pretty high up in the organization, let's say, and they tell their team, go do this. But then they walk away.
Right.
And as a result, the team is left kind of sort of not just making their own decisions, but starting to make assumptions about what it is that that leader really wanted to achieve. And so not having that, what I would call executive sponsorship in that project can really be the life or death of the project itself.
And somewhere that executive is saying, my tech team isn't talented or my tech team isn't good, and that's almost never the case. There's so many, I mean, almost all the tech teams are talented enough. It's a communication issue and a leadership issue, which is why they're not achieving what people think they should be achieving.
Right. And in many cases, you'll hear the IT people complain about shifting priorities. Yesterday you wanted this, today you want that, tomorrow you want something else. Well, the reason that they seem like shifting priorities is because there's that lack of executive communication. That's if I talk to you enough, you'll begin to hear what it is that I'm thinking and trying to get at. And so it won't seem like a seismic shift from yesterday to today because you're kind of thinking along the same lines that that business executive is. And so I'm actually maybe even ahead of you. I'm seeing where you're going before you know you want to get there. And so when the priority shifts, IT can go, we got this. We got it. We understood where you're going. And in fact, that's where we're headed anyway.
But it's easier said than done. Not everyone's like you, where they are a tech person that can communicate so well outside of technology. I remember earlier in my career, I was supporting a business person, and I was forbidden to speak to the customer. Zach, you will not talk to the customer. Why not? Because you're too honest. You're like, the customer says, how's the security? And you say, the security's not good. I said, no, you can't say that.
Right.
And so I've matured, and now I talk to customers all the time, but not every tech person is at the level where they understand the nuances of maybe playing in your world.
And quite honestly, not every...
It's not what you say, it's how you say it.
And not everyone needs to. I mean, quite honestly, there are people who are just good at what they do. I'm a programmer. I code. I don't have no interest in conversation. I have no interest in blue sky, idea, knocking around ideas. Just tell me what to build, right? And I'm good at that, and I'm happy doing that. I don't want to do anything else. And that's why when you look at things like Scaled Agile, when you look at things like ITIL, when you look at the growth of the business analyst role in many companies, that's that kind of interpreter, right? Who can fit both feet in those two worlds. They can listen to the customer and translate that into tech speak in some cases, and then take the tech speak that comes back and translate that back to the business owner and say, look, this is what IT is telling me they can accomplish,
right,
or this is what they think would be the best way to approach this. So there is still a good reason for specialization within any industry, and I don't think the software business in general is any different in that respect.
Pete, speak to that a little bit, right? Zach's point, you know, in the beginning of your sales career, selling tech, what's changed? Did you, like, you didn't even bring the IT guys with you, and then you just went to them and said, okay, I just made the sale, and build this, and they said, oh my God, we can't do that.
Oh, yeah, Zach, you can come, but right. Do not speak. Answer questions only.
How has that changed? Did you know from the beginning of your career that you had to have
this? Maybe a function of it is, you know, it's experience and just time on the job. But I think, you know, putting that aside, I think, you know, two decades ago, it was a very technical conversation. And not that it isn't today, but now it's the technical conversation. That might not be the lead conversation. The lead conversation is, you know, business outcome and impact, and how is it going to, you know, change and impact some element of what the customer is trying to do to deliver something,
right,
and who they're delivering it to, and what that person's expectation is, who's going to be the receiver of what you're delivering.
Right.
That's the conversation today. The technology then comes in as a supporting and enabling element to get you there. You know, as Brad said, you know, Tesla has built this great computer. It just happens to have four or five seats in it,
right,
multiple wheels and a windshield, and it can take you someplace up to 540 miles. Whether or not you push the insane button, right? Your mileage will be different, but your ride will be a lot more fun.
Tell me a little bit about CA's leadership development. Do you guys have tracks for the tech side and the business side? Do they merge at some point? What's that? Because Pete, you were telling me a little bit about what you went through, but we didn't get through to...
Yeah. So, I mean, the answer is yes. I mean, I think every large organization has a formal training program, right, based on your role.
Mm-hmm.
And I think CA's done a very interesting job in applying that horizontally and vertically, right? So, you know, horizontally, it's about your job. You know, what do you do in a very finite way, right? You need to have a certain skill set, right? And then horizontally, you know, over the last 4 or 5, 6 years, maybe more, it's this whole concept of, and I mentioned it earlier, leadership at all levels, right? We're no longer about kind of waiting to be told to do something. You know, you're empowered to go meet the company's mission,
mm-hmm,
right? And so I think the company has done, and it's not just CA, right? It's these companies, or these programs exist in many large and progressive organizations. Thankfully, CA, I think, is absolutely one of them. But it's this whole concept of how do you build a certain set of behaviors, right? And what are the guiding principles that we want, you know, an organization's employees to kind of live by, right? And those things, you know, it's no longer, you know, work and non-work, right? Because, you know, things like Snapchat and Twitter and Facebook, right? Everything's in, all the ingredients now are in one pot. And,
right.
You know, everything's mixed up. You know, your public world and your private world and your business world and your home world, they're all kind of interchanged now, right? And so you really have to develop a culture that is going to be perceived very positively. And I was just thinking of something about, I was watching an interview with Mike Rowe, you know, Mike Rowe, Dirty Jobs. Well, he was actually an Eagle Scout, and he was being interviewed about how he's kind of ended up in not only television, but in business, you know, he was other business dealings. He goes, what makes you tick? And he goes, oh, it's easy. You know, it's scouting. You know, it's the scout law. You know, trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean. He joked about clean because it's Dirty Jobs, and reverent. So whether it's scouting principles, or it's military principles, or it's corporate principles. You know, you have to have a baseline of how we want our organization to run,
right?
And we want a culture that's going to stand for something, right? You know, ethics, throw ethics in there, obviously.
Right.
And so, you know, I think that's the way I see it. You know, those have been my experiences. And yeah, and I went through an interesting program. It's called Leadership Development Program. And it started many, many years ago at CA for senior leadership. And then they realized, no, this should be a program for everybody.
Right.
Because even if you're an individual contributor, or if you run a small team, or if you run a division, or you're general manager, we're all leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And we all have a certain set of common, you know, attributes in which we're going to, you know, live our business life and our home, you know, not so much home life, but, you know, home life melds into business life.
100%. Vice versa,
right?
100%, yeah.
So, and that all creates good business, and it creates great customer experiences, and it, you know. So, yeah, that's my, yeah.
How about from the tech side, Brad? Because one of the things we talk about here is maybe stereotypically, but in the IT world, well, who's the smartest person? All right, put them in charge of the team. And now all of a sudden you've got kind of a crumbling structure of leadership because it's not the person who was maybe best suited to be the leader. It's just the smartest person.
The best developer.
And, you know, at what point are you required to kind of put your keyboard away and not be a developer, but to be the leader of developers? So how are you seeing that maybe at CA or just in general?
Well, CA, I mean, in my experience at CA is there's always been opportunity for individual contributors to find a new place that they want to contribute to. So as I said, I've had a number of different roles at CA. I wasn't always in sales, and I wasn't always working as an architect. And at the same time, I was never told, don't go talk to someone in marketing, don't go talk to someone in business development, don't go talk to someone in the application development world. In fact, the encouraging thing for me was, I could build my own career path. And I think a lot of that has come from this idea that I'll echo what Peter was saying, is it's about, you know, leadership training as a way of getting behaviors throughout the organization. And so by making me feel more like an entrepreneur within my company, mm-hmm. I'm now encouraged and emboldened to be able to go and take chances and say, you know what, I feel like maybe I should write a white paper on this because I think it's something I'm interested in. Well, by the way, CA will actually pay me if I get that article published in a magazine. So they're encouraging people to do things above and beyond their jobs. So there's an author program at CA, which not only helps support people who are writing, in some cases, books, but in some cases, just magazine articles or other things that are being published. And at the same time, there's also an encouragement to go out and look at things beyond your own own job skills.
Mm-hmm.
And so I go out and I present. I'm going to present at a healthcare conference in a couple of weeks. So yes, it's a healthcare conference focused on IT, but I'm not an expert in healthcare, but I am an expert in being able to take my expertise and apply it in that particular area. So CA says, yeah, go do it. Get the CA message out there, and at the same time, build some new skills and learn how to be better at what you're doing
overall. Right.
Dang it! This is a success story.
Yeah, it's a success. It's impressive too because it's based on culture, ideals, principles, and once you have those, you know, everything kind of works underneath that. As opposed, we're just, you know, wildly shooting left and right and figure out how it goes. And you know, people tend to, you know, I'm not a, you know, it's funny. I've spent my career, it seems, in huge, massive bureaucracies, but within those bureaucracies, I've been in the units that have been free-flowing and free-thinking. And, you know, I think it's just important that people realize, like, a company like CA, or, you know, you're a multi-billion-dollar company, and it's not cliche to say, no, we have a culture here. We are ethical. We are, you know, all of these things. And that matters. And then within it, all the things you say, entrepreneurial
sure.
spirit, it can all, but it doesn't exist without those leadership guidelines and principles that you either buy into or you don't. You know,
boom.
I think it's good. guys, this was
a great conversation.
It was. This is exactly what we hoped it would be. And don't turn it off yet. We're going to say goodbye, right? I guess Zach wants
goodbye.
You to the guy who goes.
Was that?
Thanks for having me.
Okay. Whatever. Awesome, guys.
I like how
we touched a lot of elements, but it became
any one of those things for the.
The Leadership in Tech podcast series is a part of a project called the Technology On-Ramp. It is a 10-week educational program for candidates preparing for their first jobs in the technology sector. You can find out more about us at www.techonramp.com. At the bottom of the homepage, you can sign up with your email address to receive episode announcements, as well as leadership tips, and professional development resources, all in our email newsletter. To find out about the players involved in the Tech On-Ramp, check out Errol Dobler at www.leader193.com, Zach Ruiz at www.salt.io, or you can check out both of their profiles, including my own, on www.poddb.me. That's www.poddb.me. Not only can you listen to us on iTunes, but you can also tune in on SoundCloud, on Google Play Music, Player.fm, Pocket Casts, and Stitcher. Thank you, and we're looking forward to seeing you next week.
Tell me what to do, and I'd gladly do my job, but I don't like your attitude. I don't like your attitude.